good afternoon. It's time for Health First. Alan Wishart sitting in this week for Kathy Hart. Got a couple of great guests lined up. Dr. Judith Orloff, first of all, talking about empathy. And then in the second half, Dr. Richard Castellano talking about burnout training for physicians. First, here's Reg with the Health First News.
If life looks gray and cloudy when you smoke, you might not be imagining it. Researchers report heavy smoking may actually damage color and contrast vision. They looked at 71 healthy people who smoked fewer than 15 cigarettes in their lives and 63 people who smoked more than 20 cigarettes a day. The participants were aged 25 to 45 and had normal or corrected to normal vision. But the heavy smokers showed significant changes in their red-green and blue-yellow color vision and also had greater difficulty discriminating contrasts and colors than non-smokers. The study was published recently in the journal Psychiatric Research. Tax it and fewer folks will buy it. So it goes with sugar-sweetened drinks, new research suggests. The California city of Berkeley introduced America's first soda tax in 2014, and within months, people were buying 21% fewer sugary drinks. 3 years later, researchers found 52% of these drinks were being sold, while consumption of water rose 29%. The study shows that a soda tax can influence what people buy and can be effective in encouraging healthier drinking habits. Researchers add this could potentially reduce diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and tooth decay, which have been linked to sugar. Researchers have found children who live in homes with vinyl flooring and flame-retardant furniture have higher levels of potentially harmful chemicals in their blood or urine. The new study included 203 children from 190 families who were tested for these chemicals, so-called semi-volatile organic compounds, in their blood or urine. For the study, the researchers analyzed samples of indoor air, indoor dust, and foam collected from furniture in each of the children's homes, along with a hand wipe, urine, and blood sample from each child. The study was presented February 17th at the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science in Washington, D.C. And finally, when it comes to the right amount of screen time, exercise, and sleep, research published recently in JAMA Pediatrics finds only 5% of teens are meeting guidelines, and girls are less likely to do so than boys. In the research conducted by Gregory Nell, Ph.D., a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston School of Public Health in Dallas, just 3% of teen girls met the recommendations, compared to 7% of boys. Guidelines suggest children ages 6 to 12 should get 9 to 12 hours of sleep a night, and those ages 14 to 18 should get 8 to 10 hours. All children between the ages of 6 and 18 should get at least 1 hour of moderate to vigorous aerobic exercise a day, and should limit screen time and exposure to all screen-based digital media to less than 2 hours in a 24-hour period. Nell says his research marks the first time all three of these behaviors have been analyzed together in a national sample of American teens.
Well, we have not had Dr. Judith Orloff call in yet, so we are going to go to an interview that Kathy Hart actually did earlier with Jason Watkin on the wonders of mushrooms.
We have Jason Watkin with us today. He's the CEO and founder, co-founder of Purica, which is a company that's on the island in Duncan, BC. He and his brother have been working with mushrooms and with herbal products to bring about the fullest potential in every aspect of life, work or play with animals or humans. And so, Jason, it's wonderful to have you on our Health First Radio today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's great. So what's new in the world of Purica and the wonders of mushrooms?
Well, yesterday I just got back an hour ago from Toronto on a big show, so I've been talking for 2 days straight, so I hope my voice holds out. But the world of the medicinal mushrooms is really taken root. I think quite a few years ago we knew that was going to happen simply because the research on medicinal mushrooms really surpasses anything out there for a lot of different serious conditions like cancer, HIV, AIDS, hepatitis, or even psychological distress. And now they're using it to treat different things like addiction to other products, so, things like smoking and other drugs. So something about mushrooms that's been known for thousands of years is really starting to catch on. It's the top of the traditional Chinese medicine field, as well as the Tibetan medicine, a lot of shamanic medicines, and a lot of the compounds in mushrooms are being studied heavily. And like I said earlier, it really started with cancer research. So, anyways, we got in there as a pioneer, and we put together something that's really powerful. So we've really focused on the serious benefits of mushrooms rather than just taking them for because you think they might boost your immune system a little bit or something like that.
Right. So can you tell us a little bit about the combinations that are being used for cancer right now?
Yeah, some of the key mushrooms that have a lot of research done and that they're now starting to move together with is a cordyceps mushroom, which has over 22 drugs developed from it. Reishi mushroom, red reishi, which is another mushroom that has probably even more research on it than even cordyceps, and it's been used for a number of different conditions as well, including sleep disorders and high blood pressure, things like that. They're all used for immune system and stress. Then there's one of the hottest mushrooms today, and it's been used for thousands of years again. They had different names for it around the world, though, so I think in a lot of different medicines, they didn't know that it was the same mushroom. And is lion's mane. And lion's mane is typically one that's used for things to do with the mind and the gastrointestinal tract. And a lot of the research right now with lion's mane, why it's so exciting, is with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and dementia. And the data that's coming out is really exciting because it actually increases nerve growth factor in the central nervous system and the periphery and in the enteric nervous system, which has to do with the gastrointestinal tract.
That's so amazing. Yeah. So lion's mane, it kind of looks like these long tendrils, like a lion's mane. It almost looks like the villa inside the intestine. Is that like the Doctrine of Signatures where it's good for that?
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that different shapes and different things is what they used to talk about in different types of medicine, what it might be good for. And they would just try it out and see, does it work? Mm-hmm. But yeah, the lion's mane, you've probably seen quite a few of the different pictures that there's all different colors, but it really does look like a lion's mane and they get quite massive mm-hmm. and you incorporate them into your diet. I guess a lot of people use them as a food in replacement to things like seafood and pork and things like that. I guess it has a similar, I've never tried it actually itself in large, more in the capsulated form, but apparently it has that same kind of texture and taste, and then you can just add your different spices and that to it.
Okay. So, yeah. That's one mushroom I've never found in the wild. I still seek it.
Oh yeah, we have to. Actually, I live on Salt Spring Island, and we've even seen a few in the trees up here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And chaga is another one. Chaga is the one that, for stress, that the Soviets found when they were doing their research, trying to combat stress. They were taking different adaptogenic substances that allow you to adapt to physical or psychological stressors in your environment. And they took a bunch of drugs, things like rhodiola, as well, ginsengs, ashwagandha, and then a number of different medicinal mushrooms that have track record of thousands of years. And they found that chaga was the number one compound, drug or herb or anything else, that helped the people to deal with stress better. And so they started utilizing it with, you know, cosmonauts, athletes, and everything a long time ago. And then once all the walls fell down, the flood of information from a Western point of view, which is more from the Soviet point of view, is, I think, starting to really flood the markets. And now it's, like I said, a few years ago, it just started to really take. And if you were to look on Medline or National Institutes of Health, and you just type in mushroom and whatever kind of condition you're looking for, you'll see that the data on it is very significant with really, like I said, really serious inflammatory mm-hmm. conditions, cancer. So, and then you can just talk to somebody that knows how to read some of the literature if it goes more in depth.
Wow. So the chaga also in the Soviet has been used as actually as a cancer remedy, hasn't it?
Yes, and they also used to use it for and they still do in parts of the former Soviet Union. They use it like coffee. And where they use chaga, they find in the Northern Hemisphere. I mean, there's differences, of course, in the Northern Hemisphere on diets and that. But typically the people who consume chaga, like coffee, instead of coffee, they have a 15 to 20 years longer lifespan. So that in itself, you have to look at other markers, but that's a pretty significant jump in age. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, really powerful antioxidant. Way beyond blueberries and all the berries and things that they say are good for you, it's not even on the same scale. And when you have something that is that high in value, ORAC value of an antioxidant, typically you're seeing that it actually inhibits damage, even acute damage. Even if you were injured or you have some type of chronic inflammatory condition, right away it's going to stop the damage in areas that precede the inflammation. And then the inflammation is obviously something that even Western medicine is now accepting, is the root of a lot of different conditions like cardiovascular disease, cancer, osteoporosis, and all of them are preceded again by stress. I mean, any types of psychological or physical stresses are causing damage, which is breaking your body down, and that releases inflammatory compounds all over your body. And so this is kind of what we're trying to get at as a company, is to try to get more to the root, not just dealing with the symptoms or even just inflammation, but before inflammation, there has to be damage, and that's why the inflammation happens. And before the damage, or simultaneous with the damage, is some type of stress that's causing a breakdown.
Keeping the stress level down right at the very front, and then working your way down with, like if there is inflammation or if you do have to do detoxification or things like that.
Yes, exactly. And then, you know, a lot of people think, what does stress have to do with the fact that I hurt my hip? But if you stress about something, and everybody knows, when say you hurt your hip or your shoulder, you typically don't sleep well. And then if you don't sleep well, you typically are more reactive. You can maybe get moody, or you can't think straight, or you just don't feel, and you're agitated. And that's actually a further stress reaction. Every time that you are, say, irritated or tense or worried or judgmental or moody, whatever, it doesn't really matter, holding on to your opinions when somebody else has a different opinion, you kind of feel tense. And that would be technically your body now is posturing in the sympathetic or stress-related mechanisms in your body are kicked in. And
so
all those mechanisms are to fight or run or freeze, even if it's just that you're mad at your iPad or iPhone had an update that didn't work very well. Whenever you feel tense, your body thinks it wants to fight or run and or freeze, and so it starts to break its muscle tissue down and other tissues to create a lot of sugar so that the muscles can fight or run, and all the blood flow moves away from your core or your trunk and parts of your brain. So you can't think straight when you're stressed.
Mm-hmm.
You can think certain ways. Your senses can become heightened, but your ability to think altruistically, especially about any kind of long-term or holistic kind of thinking where you can see the big picture, that's completely deleted. That's why some people, when they get stressed, you cannot answer tests, questions that maybe you even knew before.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the questions stressed you out before, and that's why they tell you, leave that alone for a while, go to something you know, and come back to it when you're less stressed, because stress is really, all it is just breaking your body down, aging you on the spot, just like taking corticosteroids, like cortisone, prednisone, or if you have Cushing disease, which is a hypersecretion of stress hormone cortisol. Though the symptoms of that are the exact same as accelerated aging. So you're just breaking down your bones, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, dementia, degeneration of the spine, osteoporosis, osteopenia, breakdown and solidification or hardening of the tendons and ligaments and other tissues. So you become less flexible. It's just basically, you can see it in animals easier because they don't live as long. So a horse, for instance, with Cushing's disease or hyperstress, they age really fast. And you can see it physically, but that's also happening inside. So your digestion doesn't work as well. Everything that you see with age. When it happens when you're young, you think you have a disease.
Mm-hmm.
When it happens when you're older, you'll accept it as part of aging. But in reality, they're both dis-ease mechanisms or stress-related mechanisms.
Right.
So you got to get the root.
Jason, we're going to have to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about how to ignite that parasympathetic nervous system and get us into rest and digest.